Patrick Skahill says he wants what's best for the people of Connecticut. But how will he pay for his tax cuts when a $1.8 billion deficit already looms over the... Why did you stop the music?
I wasn't feeling it.
You weren't feeling it? It's an attack ad. Who cares whether you felt it?
I can't play if I'm not feeling it.
Play? All you do is turn the crank on that music box. You're getting paid a lot of money for this session.
The music box and I have to feel it.
Would you excuse me for just a second? Greg, I cannot work with this guy.
Look, he's the creepy music box campaign ad guy. He gets flown all over the country during election season. We were lucky to book this session. They wanted him in Pennsylvania today.
Well, he's weird.
Just give him a little more to work with. Use script number two.
Okay, we're going to try something different. Go ahead. Patrick Skahill says he's one of us. But look at the big, dark, scary castle he lives in. Do you live in a castle? Patrick Skahill is wrong for Connecticut. He has no plan to deal with the $8.6 billion in major, long-term, unfundable initiatives in the... What? Now what?
It was good for a while. But then the music box and I stopped feeling it.
Just excuse me for just a second? Why can't we just use a recorded instrumental music bed? There must be, like, millions of them.
Because all the focus groups show that it's different when you use the creepy music box campaign ad guy. He wins elections for people. He's worth every penny we pay him.
Should I try script three?
Totally.
Okay, I'm back.
The music box and I hope you have a new script.
Yep, we do. Let's just take it from the top. Patrick Skahill says he's your friend, but what he really wants to do is drain your life force into a machine in his basement and turn it over to evil robots as part of their plan to enslave us. Patrick Skahill, a frontman for our robot overlords, and no friend to you.
Paid for by people who will die if Patrick Skahill is elected.
That was great.
Thanks. Do you want to grab a drink with us, or...?
No, I have to catch a plane. They need me in the music box for a recording session in Ohio.
Well, could you just turn the crank while I finish this intro?
Gladly.
Today on the show, ad gurus and journalists review this year's campaign commercials. And now, in the Elizabeth Esty family commercial, he plays old Uncle Nutcup, Colin McEnroe.
I was actually cut out of that. I mean, I had a much bigger role in the original commercial. Let me just tell you that we are going to talk about one of your favorite subjects, campaign commercials. You love them. You love this time of year. It's just so great. With us are our ad gurus. Steve Wolfbrook is Principal and Chief Creative Officer for Cronin & Company. Chris Knopf is Chief Executive Officer for Mintz & Hoke and the author of many mystery novels, including Cries of the Lost, and most recently just arrived in my mailbox, A Billion Ways to Die, which is also the name of, I think, a Dan Malloy attack ad on Tom Foley as well. Also with us, Matt Kaufman. He is the man commercial makers fear. He's the political reporter for the Hartford Current, but he's the ad check guy. He's the Hartford Current Truth Squad. Max Reese made a huge mistake leaving sunny Alabama and Georgia to come back here and be a political reporter for NBC Connecticut. He'll be a moderator for this Thursday's NBC gubernatorial debate. So, Max, I'm going to start with you and just say, you know, there's been a lot of reporting to the effect that this is, at least according to one snapshot taken by the Wesleyan Media Project, the most negative gubernatorial race in America based on the tone, tenor, and slant of the ads. I assume you believe that Connecticut deserves its reputation at this moment.
I think it's well-earned. It's well-earned. You know, you turn on the TV, whatever you're watching, you can't avoid these things. These guys don't like each other. It's clear. Steve said it earlier when we were in the break room. You know, we haven't seen one positive ad from these guys, which I think just tells you how much these guys hate each other and how much they decided that this is going to be a negative race.
You know, Matt Kaufman, aside from getting in trouble with Matt Kaufman, are there actual rules about what candidates can say or outside interest groups can say of a negative nature? I mean, you're going to truth squad them. You're going to assign them grades. But in terms of actual other consequences, are there a whole lot of rules or curbs on the speech of candidates in these commercials?
There is one rule, and that is you can say anything you want no matter what, whether it's true or not. And broadcasters are required by law to put your ad on the air. So, no, there are no consequences other than, you know, the fact that there are opposing camps that are going to call you on it and media organizations.
So that's not exactly a rule, if you can do anything you want.
not a rule in the traditional sense.
Not in the traditional sense of rule. So, Chris Knopf, you know, as by the way, I'm sure you have your own reactions, like, can I make my DVR work even faster to get through them? But give us a call, 860-275-7266. Or if you have questions, 860-275-7266. You may tweet us also at WNPR Colin. So, Chris Knopf, you know, I mean, in some years, certain kinds of negative ads pop out. You know, and famously, you know, Joe Lieberman running against Lil Weicker ran this kind of animated thing about a bear, it really did seem to help him. But in an environment like this one, where 80, 85% of the ads on the air in this race are negative, is it possible to make a distinctly negative impression with any particular ad?
I think it may be possible, but we sure haven't seen it. One of my big takeaways was it feels like the same creative team is doing everything. You really hit on it with your intro there. It's the all the same consultants all doing the same thing, and I can't tell them apart. Actually, the visuals, the headlines, the faces that they come with these pictures of these guys, they're absolute worst.
Right. A lot of the Malloy ones are actually pictures of Wolfberg.
That might be an improvement.
They are sort of almost body doubles.
Yeah, they are. Yeah.
Go ahead.
You should recuse yourself then.
Yes, indeed.
So do you agree with that there's a sort of a – I mean, I think I share his sense that fewer things have leapt out at me in this election cycle. It does – there's a sameness.
Yeah, the one that seems to stick out to me might be the Pinocchio one that against Malloy. Of course, I can't help but think about the Geico spot with the Pinocchio as the motivational speaker. So I think about that one. So that one at least goes a little bit outside of the traditional, you know, black and white, bad photograph, music box music, and has a little bit of a memorable device, as it were. But it's just piling on, and it's like I give up already.
We have many ads here to play for you, and poor Wolfie's on the board right now sorting through them all. So as she looks for the Pinocchio ad, let me just set it up by saying that we won't really be able by radio to share with you and the slightly pornographic nature of this ad. You found it a little sort of borderline pornographic.
I did. Yeah. That was the best part of it, really.
Right. But so there is this thing that kind of shoots forward that's his nose.
It's his nose.
Yeah. Can we do sound effects to help?
If you just caught it out of the corner of your eye, it might draw your attention because you might misconstrue what you're looking at.
All right, so let's play the Pinocchio ad. This is sort of trying to steal Matt Kaufman's job, really, this Pinocchio ad. But let's listen to it.
Matt Malloy has a problem with the truth. He says he's cut spending, but he let spending go up $3 billion. Dan says he's creating jobs, but over 3,000 jobs left Connecticut in August alone. He promised to hold down electric bills, then added extra charges so your bills have gone up. He said he wouldn't raise taxes, then gave us the largest tax increase in state history. Dan, people in Connecticut want the truth.
I'm Heather Summers.
And I'm Tom Foley, and I approve this message.
Matt Kaufman, they're kind of this is ad kind of riffs on something that you and a lot of other reporters and journalistic entities around the country do, which is Truth Squad ads. And there are even some ads that use a Pinocchio nose rating system. First of all, did you Truth Squad this one? I don't know. You've got so many of them.
Right.
To do,
no, this is not an ad that I fact checked.
But it is. It does kind of try to do what you guys do. I think it's a pretty conscious imitation. Is this other candidate telling the truth?
Oh absolutely. Yeah. Calling your candidate a liar, untruthful, is obviously something that's going to kind of catch the electorate. So it's not an uncommon tactic. Though I haven't dug into all of these specifics, there are, you know, areas that have cropped up in other ads. The electorate would likely find is that there's partial truth to everything in it and maybe not 100% truth to sort of any of it. Certainly he did at least sort of 90% promise not to raise taxes and did raise taxes. And I think it's been the one really effective thing that Foley's ads have spoken to and kind of hammered that through. But honestly, I mean, I think, you know, if we ran on the table and go, all right, what are the other things that Malloy allegedly lied about? I mean, it takes a while. This gets back to what Chris was saying about the sameness of it, is there was an ad and people were piling on and I'm not supposed to like the guy. I can't remember exactly what it was. And the way that the, you know, the Bear ad spoke to a larger issue that resonated with people. And I think that's what's been missing, I think, from these ads, is that they haven't sort of sealed the deal and says, so while I'm dumping all over my opponent, here's why. Here's why it gets to either a, you know, a specific character issue that you care about or something bigger to kind of hold on to. And I think some of the ads had fodder for that and they just sort of never delivered.
That ad is called, the ad you're talking about is called Extreme. Do you want to hear Extreme? We have Extreme for you.
Sure.
All right, here's Extreme.
I'm Elizabeth Esty, and I approve this message.
You paid into it every paycheck. But Mark Greenberg would end Social Security's guarantee.
It's a failure. Social Security is a failure as far as I'm concerned. You got to rely upon your own system of retirement, your self-retirement system, and not the Social Security system. In that case, you're off the public dole. Social Security is a failure as far as I'm concerned.
Actually, this is a different ad. This is the ad actually that won, if that's the right word, the Matt Kaufman Award so far, anyway, right? For the least accurate, most inaccurate.
This is the only ad this season, right? That's earned a flat out false rating.
And why did it do that? Because it sounds like a completely legitimate ad to me.
Right. all of the quotes are taken pretty badly out of context. And the main sort of affirmative claim that Greenberg would end Social Security's guarantee, there's really no basis in fact for that. There's sort of this like three-step thing the campaign went through to say, well, AARP believes if you allow this to happen, then the fallout from that will do this, and eventually that can threaten the guarantee. Clearly, this makes it look like it is part of Greenberg's platform to eliminate the Social Security guaranteed benefit and replace it with something else. That's not his platform. And then again, all of the quotes, they're like million-dollar quotes if you're the opposing campaign. But if you then see what came before, what came after, you realize it was talking about something significantly different than the impression left by that ad.
I think the other thing that happened there, and this is what I'm pretty sure we don't have. Did you guys see the ad where Greenberg had his own father in the ad?
Yes.
Yeah, mm-hmm. You saw that one. Have you seen that one?
I'm not sure I've seen that
one. Yeah, it's a very menschy kind of ad. It's very, very effective.
Menschy.
Yeah, very menschy. I don't know if you use mensch as an adjective or not. But
I just did.
It
worked effectively.
Yeah, and he managed to come across as he does a lot in his ads as kind of avuncular. You know, another thing that happens in the ad that Matt was talking about, the one we just played, is there's sort of a Max Headroom effect going on, right? It's people watching a television. There's some attempt, Chris, to sort of thrust the viewer into the role that the viewer is in anyway. It's sort of a postmodern ad or something.
Yeah, and they pull the color out, and so you've they really do a great job of distorting even the way he looks. So besides the verbal aspects of the deception, I mean, he really is an avuncular kind of kindly guy. If you see his spots that are positive, like the doggy spot, we're going to get to the doggy
Love
spot.
The doggy
you,
spot.
You can't go wrong with the doggy spot. He's got that quality about him. It's really quite kindly, and yet he looks like just like the most evil, creature.
That's what you guys would get paid all that money for. Take a nice guy and make him look evil. So, by the way, our number 860-275-7266. Max, I don't know whether you can comment on this or not, but you were down south for a couple of election cycles. I don't know. And you heard Chris and Steve say, well, it's like national advertising agencies and the ads all look the same. Are ads up here any different from what you remember down there?
I think the difference is, well, first of all, yes, a lot of them look nearly identical. I mean, I've talked about this with Steve many times. It's so funny that you must have a serrated edge of a newspaper clipping. that's a rule.
Yeah.
Just like in the beginning, that harmonious, evil, humidity tones kind of thing. Mm. You need those too. But I think also, down south, the difference with the vitriol was toward the national stuff. It wasn't really back and forth. It was put Obama in your ad, make sure he looks horrible and grainy, just like Chris said, make him look really evil, and then you've got yourself a perfect attack ad. But I think what we've seen here with a lot of these, and I think we've heard some of our folks here talk about it, we're seeing a lot of kind of classical TV things. See dog, say dog. This guy's not supposed to look trustworthy. Let's make him look dark. You know, with Pinocchio, everybody thinks of lying. They think of Pinocchio. Mm-hmm. So let's make Dan Malloy look like Pinocchio. Everybody knows what that means. I don't know what he's saying, but I know they're telling me he's lying. And I think that those are some trends, especially down south. I mean, look, yes, it's nasty all over the country, mm-hmm. but I think it's perfectly nasty up here right now as well with a lot of these.
And we beat Florida, which is pretty cool. I never thought our ads would be
big win.
That's a big win. Yeah, so we're number one. And as you said, Colin, it's a different foam finger that's being shown when you're number one in this world.
I'm kind of proud of that, really. Yeah, I mean, we got, you know, Connecticut got to, you know.
We got to be known for something anyway.
Yeah. That's right.
And why, Steve, do we not see more creativity? Do we not see more creativity because there's just kind of a formula, a kind of play, 3 yards in a cloud of dust play that they run over and over again? I mean, you know, you and I have taught classes together where we went over some of the really iconic ads that people talk about 30, 40 years later because they're so out of the box or they're so memorable just in their starkness or creativity. But that's not the rule. That's totally the exception. Why is it so much the exception?
It's highly likely that the good stuff is being focus grouped out, and there's certain things that seem to work and get people in the room and they gravitate towards the familiar. It's highly unlikely that the Daisy ad, which celebrated its 50th anniversary this year, was focus grouped, or you know, there's a bear in the a different not a bear in the cave but a bear in the woods, which was one of Reagan's in 1984. Clearly those are probably not tested. I mean, there's a certain formula that works. People don't like to take risks. Certainly with this much at stake. And that's likely why it's more of the same, because these consultants can say, hey, it worked for so-and-so, it'll work for you, you know, put on the template.
There's a general rule in creativity where after you do it enough, like they know this in packaged goods and selling cars and toothpaste. That's why a lot of that stuff seems the same, because they know they can get to maybe a B- pretty much all the time. Consistently, not just focus groups, but also experience out on the market. So you got to show the car. If you don't show the car, you're not going to sell the car. Right. But then, but the risky ones are just that. So you might be able to get an A, but on the other hand, you could get an F. Right. Nobody wants to take a chance on the F.
Exactly.
Well, and just like what Steve said, everybody knows what works.
Right.
They know what works. So in some of the cases, yes, they're going to focus group this stuff, but they know what the focus groups are going to say.
Yeah.
So you know that's why they can keep going to that old script.
I mean, you know, and I think also one difference between this and the world of commercial advertising is, first of all, there are some rules, back to Matt's point, about commercial advertising. You can't, if you're Colgate, say Crest makes your teeth fall out, it makes your breath stink, it makes you sick. You know, you can't say those things. But it seems unlikely that you would anyway. That's not the style of advertising, to mention the competitor. It's rare that they mention the competitor, right? And it's certainly rare that they spend the entire ad talking crap about the competitor.
Yeah, because there is legal constraints, especially if it's network, and they have to conform to all kinds of things, and you leave yourself wide open for legal action.
One big difference is the fact that in terms of market share in politics, if you don't have 51% market share, you're out of business, or unless it's a three-way race. But generally, you need 51% to survive. In the real world, you can survive with a 40%, 30% market share. GM has 20% market share, and they're the market leader. So if you really had to have 50% to live on as a product, you might do tougher. You know, Pepsi says that Coke is made by underage immigrant workers whose parents voted for gun control. You don't know what type of ads would happen if you didn't have 51% of your market share. You'd be out of business. So that's a different way to look at it.
Matt, when you truth squat these ads, is there back and forth? I mean, do the campaigns get in touch with you? If you go negative on an ad, do they try to spin you on it?
I want to say always. I think always have reached out to them, say, I'm curious to see your fact-checking on this. You know, I can often, you know, they've started adding newspaper clipping, something you can see where it came from. But I'm always happy to sort of hear from them. And then certainly like with that SD ad, I went back with them a couple of times and said, you know, they send me a bunch of stuff and I'd say, I'm still not seeing anything that supports blank. You know, if you have something, let me see it. And so, we'll have something of a back and forth. I suppose they're trying to spin me. I think they know it's not going to be particularly effective to, you know, try to persuade me that their candidate is the better choice and therefore, you know, cut us a break, something like that. But, yeah, they sort of try to provide what they have.
All right, let's grab a break here. We're talking about campaign ads. Our number, 860-275-7266. If you have questions, if you have complaints, there's actually nothing we can do about any of your complaints, but we'd be happy to listen anyway. 860, we can go negative. Yeah, we can go negative. You can go negative. 860-275-7266. Go ahead and tweet us, too, at WNPR Colin.
Vote for me, vote for me, vote for me. If you want a larger house, vote for me. If you want a younger spouse, vote for me. If you offset their mileage, the exchange is carbon free. Vote for me, vote for me, vote for me.
Here we come. We're back. We're talking about political ads. We've got some people calling in here. We got Steve Wolfberg, Chris Knopf, both ad gurus from Cronin & Company and Minson Hoke, respectively. Matt Kaufman, the truth squatter of the Hartford Current. Max Reese is the political reporter for NBC Connecticut and will be a moderator this Thursday, NBC gubernatorial debate. All right, so, well, you know, actually, we're talking about the interesting thing during the break, which is sort of when journalists and journalism organizations kind of get pulled into these ads. We had it happen earlier this year with a John McKinney ad during the primary season against Tom Foley, where, and I think it was the very alert ears of our own Tucker Ives, who said, you know, I think that audio of Foley is from our show, but it seemed as though Foley's mouth was moving in this TV ad, and in fact, they'd sort of matched it up and taken it a little bit out of context. It was kind of a negative for John McKinney, who's ordinarily kind of a nice guy, but this commercial was really, really deceptive, and they had made improper use of our audio. We also often have fights with them when they pull a Kion Wolf photo without asking for our permission, but it can go even further than that. So let's hear an ad called Radical.
Another day, another right-leaning political group comes out in favor of Tom Foley for governor.
First, the gun lobby. After Foley said he'd sign a repeal of the new gun law, they endorsed him. Now it's the Anti-Women, Anti-Gay Family Institute. They oppose contraceptive coverage, marriage equality, and a woman's right to choose, even in cases of rape or incest. Foley sought and got their endorsement, too. The radical right wing wants Tom Foley. Do you?
I'm Dan Malloy, and I approve this message.
You know, I could be wrong about this. We'll get to the sort of the inside journalism part of this. I think this is the one where at the end, when they say, do you, they show like this image of this random woman, right? There's this sort of blonde-haired, middle-aged-looking woman who's – and I was like, who's she? I mean, she just suddenly pops up right at the end. It's like she's the woman voter that should be really worried about all this stuff. But she's like – it's just like she's sort of a generic woman or something. It's very strange. All right, so the thing that you hear at the beginning is one of your anchors, right, Max, doing the lead-in.
Yes, it's Brad Drazen. He's a friend. He's one of our main anchors. He does our 5 p.m. newscast. And, you know, that intro was for one of our stories. That was our script. And they – what we were talking about was, you know, whoever made the ad, probably an ad firm in D.C., they ripped that out and they took the script and the video and they said, all right, let's put this in the ad. So we're all caught off guard at the TV station saying, well, it looks like we're now stumping for Dan Malloy and against Tom Foley with an intro about another, you know, one of the right-leaning groups endorsing Tom Foley. And it's not something that we're going for. We don't want to be thrown in the middle of those races. We try to just cover them. But, hey, I was just saying to Steve, it puts our guys on other newscasts in other parts of the market.
Well, that's one way to look at it. And the other part of this, so on the one hand, you guys feel angry and freaked out because you're being appropriated by a political campaign. On the other hand, you have Tom Foley coming after you saying, Tom Foley's people coming after you saying, what about that intro? What do you mean, right? What is that?
There is some context for this because we've asked Tom Foley about his stances on these things. And he says, look, I'm not going to change the same-sex marriage law and I'm not going to change any abortion laws. But these groups, they come out, they are obviously aligned probably closer to the Tea Party. They come out and then it looks like that NBC Connecticut is going out and slamming him. And when you talk to Malloy's campaign people, they go, it was a great ad, wasn't it? They're the first ones to say, man, that was a fun ad to run.
And Matt, I assume there's no rules against them using journalists in this particular way?
I don't know. There actually might be. I mean, no broadcaster could deny them access to the airwaves, but it's conceivable that the station, you know, or NBC Universal could file a suit against the campaign for a copyright infringement. But yeah, in terms of had the station said, please stop running this ad, they'd have no authority to do that.
So, you know, the ads, I think, can kind of be divided into two groups. I mean, obviously, positive and negative. Positive, very small group. But also, another way to divide up these ads is ads that are factual in nature, that can be truth-squatted by Matt Kaufman, that are about either policy statements the other person has made or accomplishments that this particular candidate can boast about or those kinds of things. And then there's this whole other group of ads that really have to do with injecting likability where frequently none exists. or injecting dislikability. So, first of all, I'm wondering, I'm going to ask the two ad guys, I mean, have any ads besides the Pinocchio one, do you think any of the ads that have run in Connecticut this year have stood out, have worked, are memorable for any reason?
Memorable for any reason? On the positive side or any side?
No, I mean, anything.
Well, the yacht ad, I think we're going to talk about. The yacht ad was, memorable. It stuck out. I mean, it certainly was a crystal clear expression of their strategy of painting Foley as being an out-of-touch rich guy who, you know, is just gazing at us through the bow of his yacht.
Right. So let's hear that yacht ad. Yeah, and do try to – the one visual image that you really absolutely have to remember is right at the end, I believe, the last thing you see is the view off that you're a boat guy. It's the bow of the yacht?
I think
what are we looking
at? Bow.
Yeah, the bow. All right.
I don't know. Stern bow.
He's a sailor.
All
right.
One of those ends.
Let's remind me not to get on a boat with you if you don't know the difference.
let's hear the yacht ad. Here we go.
The world must look different from a $5 million yacht. Maybe that's why Tom Foley thinks it makes sense to cut $40 million from local schools, and why he would let Connecticut's biggest employer leave the state, and why he opposed the minimum wage, and opposes earned sick time, and would repeal the gun law, and how he got away with paying zero income tax for 2 years. So remember, if you let Tom Foley sit here, he looks at the world from here.
I'm Dan Malloy, and I approve this message.
So, Steve Wolfberg, my son and I were watching the Packers game on Sunday, and this ad came up, and my son's 25. So I tried to see what kind of impact it made on him. He was a little suspicious of it. You know, he felt as though he was being manipulated. But I actually think this is for what it is, and it's certainly not the kind of ad that can make a race pivot or anything like that. Mm-hmm. But for what it is, I think it kind of works relatively well.
You know, it does. But they could not control themselves, and they still had to add five or six different bullet points into it. I mean, I think if Chris or I were going to do that ad, you just simply have someone who looked like Foley on the boat sailing on the yacht, and you didn't have to talk about minimum wage or this or tax, and just like let it be simple and let the visual carry the day. So they just kept piling on information after information.
There's a little
but like conceptually, it's a pretty good spot.
As so often is the case with these, and it has a little bit also to do, I think, with the personality of the candidate. There's a little bit of running to the teacher's desk here, and you know what else he did? He didn't pay any taxes. You know what else he did? And what else Tom did?
Yeah,
that's a great way of putting it.
And to your point, it's TV is not an information medium. The more information you try to convey, I'm sorry, man.
Unless Max is reporting something.
Hey, Max, my mother begs to differ.
He just walked out of the room.
I should have said that more carefully. Television advertising is not an informational. It's an emotional medium for advertising, not journalism. And so the more you add information, you're causing people to think. And I'm not saying that in an insulting way. You're making people process facts and figures. You lose their ability to really absorb the emotion. The Daisy ad had almost no information at all. Mm-hmm. It was very powerful. They took the time to build it. And, you know, if I were counseling these folks, I would say go for the emotion, because you're just going to undermine it with all these other facts and figures, and it'll make Matt's life a lot easier. Right. He'll have a lot less to do.
Go ahead, Max.
I think Chris makes a fabulous point. And you're right. It's a visual medium. It's a visual medium, not informational medium. I 100% agree. The advertising. But even on television, look, you need to see what you're saying. We're talking about a yacht. We're talking about an image of luxury, of wealth that the vast majority of Connecticut residents, despite perhaps some kind of national perception, don't know. But to Steve's point, what does it matter? We're talking about $40 million in cuts for education. Why are we on a boat then? Why are we talking about minimum wage? We're still on this boat. If it was a little more focused, I think it could have easily been a, this is not Connecticut, you don't want this guy.
Right. That sort of goes to the point I was saying earlier on, that they don't quite seal the deal on these things, mm-hmm. that is something that I thought the Malloy camp might have been able to, you know, make some sort of honest inroads into of the sense of, you know, what they had on some of, I think, the package, you know, he's not for us or he's not right. one of us. Right. Also, can we talk like this for the rest of the –
it's a music box.
For the people just yes. tuning in. But it and the negativity, I mean, I think, right, a lot of this does go to kind of the folks that we have running here. I'm not surprised this is the most negative campaign. I think that does reflect the people run. I mean, if you think about it, right, I mean, what is this race about? These two men are in a battle to decide who's going to be the second least popular politician in Connecticut. That's the goal that they're reaching for here. Mm-hmm. And the, you know, the ads kind of reflect that.
We have a phone call. Someone's called 860-275-7266. Her name is Karen. She's from Niantic. Hi, Karen. You're on the air.
Hi. I have to say my comment is about my frustration. I'm an independent voter. I'm looking for a candidate who I can trust, who has integrity.
Liar.
And I mean, it's just not going to happen. Both people are liars. I mean, if the premise is I have to fact-check their ads, why am I going to trust them to run my government? It makes no sense to me.
Well, a part of that is why Malloy is going much more negative than trying to talk about whatever accomplishments he has, is because no one seems to be buying the positive stuff that he may have done over the last 4 years. But his negatives are maybe a little bit less than Foley's negatives. So he just keeps staying on the negative because they're hoping that you're going to dislike Foley more and then wind up voting for Malloy. So his positive messages were not resounding and not sticking. So he's going negative and hopefully gets you to like the other guy less.
Or you just write in Patrick Scahill.
Yeah.
Right.
He's a good
guy. I've heard some terrible ads about him. Let's just sort of stay with the likability theme for a second here. So in the only other race that seems to be hotly contested where there's a lot of advertising spending is the 5th District. Now, that's the one where Matt Coffin has already given a total failing grade to an Elizabeth Esty ad. Mark Greenberg does, or somewhere between Mark Greenberg and the people who are doing his ads, there's a kind of a nice folksy touch. There's the ad where his dad appeared. And then Mark Greenberg has a tremendous advantage, which is that he runs an animal shelter. At least it's most of the time a tremendous advantage, except when John Rowland approaches you and tries to get you to do something that you shouldn't do through your animal shelter. But mainly what he does have is a lot of dogs who will work for no pay. And so here's the ad that he ran.
I can handle this. It's the barking in Washington that needs to stop. Democrats and Republicans bark at each other while nothing gets done. Instead of working to create jobs, fix health care, or clean up our finances, they bark. I'm an outsider, a businessman who creates jobs and balances budgets. I rescue dogs in Connecticut, and I'll rescue us from Washington, because politicians don't just bark, they bite. I'm Mark Greenberg, and I approve this message.
Well, you got to love this ad, Matt Coffman, not only because they got the Mayberry RFD whistling going on instead of the scary music box, but, you know, I mean, who doesn't like dogs? And it's not an attack ad on Esty.
Right. I think actually – and there is a brand new ad I saw it this morning that was unfortunately unmemorable enough that I don't specifically remember it. But a Greenberg ad that did go very, very negative, and I was waiting for the end of it. I assume it did not come from the campaign, but in fact it did. But certainly in this ad, right, the whistling I keep picturing like that Robert Crumb keep on trucking guy walking down the street. you know, right with the big feet.
I don't think he's involved with the Greenberg campaign.
Sort of whistling there. It's like, how much whistling do you get in a political campaign? That's certainly from a creative standpoint. As a, you know, I'm not an ad guy, but I covered advertising for years anyway. That seemed to work quite well in being quite likable and in taking issue with what's going on in Washington without making it sound negative. You know, you see ads in some other parts of the country. And there are people who are I will go to Washington and repeal Obamacare. And in this part of the country, there's a certain sense of, isn't that sort of a settled issue and we're going to move on? He talks about fixing health care. That would have been, I think, a much less effective ad if he had said scrapping Obamacare, even if that's what he agrees with. And so it didn't get into specifics. There's absolutely nothing fact-checkable in there. Dogs do bark and they do bite. I can, can confirm that. But otherwise, yeah, a rare, pure likability ad in this campaign.
I do want to correct one thing, Colin, is that dogs do work for kibble.
Oh, they work.
Right. If you've ever you've been on a set with dogs, you don't feed the dogs. Otherwise, they don't want to do anything anymore.
Same with the art director.
That's true. That's true. And there's no kids in this spot, though, so they did miss half of the convention of great advertising. Like, they got dogs, but no kids.
But we do have a spot that has kids in it. This is the Elizabeth Esty ad. It's called Speak. It is the ad. It's the only ad I really care about in this entire campaign, I have to be honest with you. And I've watched it so many times. as we set up Speak, I should just say that it did seem to me anyway as though Greenberg was doing a pretty good job of positioning himself as a likable guy. He brings his dad out to talk about Social Security. He's got the dogs. And Elizabeth Esty, I think this ad is a very specific attempt to respond to that strategy by Greenberg and to make an ad with Elizabeth Esty where her likability is accentuated. So what you see is her sitting down with her entire family. I think it's three kids. Her husband, Dan, is over on the left. He's got the paper, and it's like just a typical Sunday afternoon
And they always sit on that side of the table.
That's right.
Always.
That's
where
there's
they
like one always one table, one side of their dining room table that nobody sits
it's
on.
It's like in History of the World for the Last Supper. Everyone will be in the picture. Everybody get on the other side of the table.
All right. So that's a good point, Max. I hadn't thought about that. All right. So in all the thinking I've devoted to this ad, I missed that one part of it. All right. So here we go.
There are some things we want to tell you about our mom, Elizabeth Esty.
Well, yeah.
She's home every weekend. Right, Dad?
That's right. She donated her pay to veterans groups during the government shutdown.
Helped block a congressional pay raise.
And worked across party lines to cut wasteful spending.
To make government live within its means. Sorry, Mom, was there something you wanted to say?
I'm Elizabeth Esty, and I approve this message because sometimes actions speak louder than words.
Okay, before I let our whole panel comment on this, there's a couple of things I have to explain to you in case you haven't seen this ad. So the premise is that the kids keep interrupting. She can't get a word in edgewise. That's the joke of the ad. And occasionally they cut to her, and she kind of giggles. I mean, she has this kind of goofy, giggly look on her face. And then the last time it happens, she kind of crumples down. She's like, so the whole thing is just so hilarious and at the same time frustrating that she crumples to the table and buries her head in her hands because it's just so crazy there at the SD house where all the kids talk and Dan's reading the paper and it's just so nutty that she just doesn't know what to do but put her head in her hands and laugh. So I don't know. So I'm all done. Who wants to go? All right, Chris.
Well, I wouldn't say that the acting performance was Shakespeare. It did have a little bit of an ersatz quality to the delivery, I have to say. And the hilarity at the end was kind of – it almost felt like there was another joke going on that we weren't getting to share in, that in between cuts they were telling dirty stories or something like that. And she does crumple, but to be fair, Colin, she crumples in mirth.
Yeah, in mirth.
And she's not
yeah.
in despair
no, no.
over the her,
it's a mirthy
her the
crumpling.
Fail. It's a mirthy. It's
she's
a
crumbling
mirthy.
From the nuttiness of it all.
And I don't want to steal your idea, but what about Dan's performance there, Steve?
Yeah, the question is how happy he is that his wife is home every weekend. It's like, yeah, she's home every weekend. So, yeah, that's, I don't know. It's just, I appreciate the effort to try to go a little positive. It's, and then it's just a little
goofy
for me. Not that I want them to go yelling and screaming, but it's just, again, it is textbook. At least it's a little more positive, but put them around the table. Stuff a turkey, put it on the table, and everybody eats and enjoys being home.
There was an ad right before I left Alabama that's so familiar, but it kind of reached another level where you had a daughter of a male U.S. not U.S. but state Senate candidate who said, "My daddy won't let me date." talking about him as a father. And, they're trying to show.
Well, my daddy bankrupted the bib. So there.
I think that's the next one. We're going to see that one next because we haven't heard enough about bib yet. Anyway, both ads, whether it's Greenberg with his dad or in a dog shelter or here, they're trying to not be who they are. That's what we're trying to do, trying to show you, no, really, we're folksy people. We're normal folks, even though we all don't always sit on this side of the breakfast table.
Yeah, so I think the Esty ad may work on that level, but they also, added some specifics in there. Mm-hmm. And I think they really get lost. I mean, I think we all remember, right, Does anyone remember? I mean, we all remember.
She donated her check, and I don't remember why.
Yeah, but did she? Yeah, and I think Dan wasn't happy about that either.
Yeah, when there was a government shutdown, she donated her check, and you know what? Stick with that, because people can only remember so much. And I'd be very curious what folks would do if they went into 15-second TV commercials. Can you imagine a political ad in just 15 seconds, how much they still try to push all that same stuff into 15 seconds and just speak faster? So, yeah, that's a little overkill. Nice lady, did good things, family. But, yeah, at some point, all those details just get
But lost. Maybe that's okay. I mean, maybe that's what the ad folks are looking for is just this general positive impression. And if you remember government waste or donating to veterans, that's great. And if not, you know, you remember the crumple.
Nice family.
I do want to say we have to take a little break here, but I mean, you don't see a lot of humor in political ads. If they do it, they seem to do it as web ads because they don't have to spend a lot of money on it. They don't have to get that F grade that our ad gurus here were talking about. So if the joke falls flat, you know, then it's not a big disaster. But I do notice that when they try to do something humorous, it frequently isn't funny. And there's something very discordant for me. And I remember Lamont tried to do one when he was launching his campaign too, about like this real funny, crazy, zany, hilarious situation that's going on, except it's not. You know, it's like nothing funny is happening, but everybody's they're all laughing at the end of the spot. All right, we have to take a little break. We'll come back. We've got more to talk about. Time is flying by, so stay tuned.
All pull up the trees, cover up the farmland, that's what the country needs. We don't need fresh air and clean water, we need industry.
Betsy Kaplan says she produced this show with me. Betsy ate her peanut butter sandwich at 10:45 this morning. If Betsy can't wait until showtime, what other impulses is she not controlling? Greg Hill tweets for us at WNPR. Colin, what kind of job for a grown man is tweeting? Our interns today are Josh Nalea and Nia Tyler. Is the similarity in their names a coincidence or something more? Josh and Greg appeared in today's intro. What were they supposed to be doing at that time? Why does somebody always play the part of Bill Curry? Why doesn't Bill Curry play himself? For show pages, articles, and a video of the Faith Middleton Show staff partying on their $10 million yacht when they said they were helping you, visit our website, WNPR.org. On tomorrow's show, the history of hanging. And now, back to Colin.
All right. So we were just talking sort of apropos of the SD spot that you heard at the end. We're talking about the fact that campaign commercials are almost never funny. I think there have been some funny negative ads over the course of the years, but we can't even remember any of them. Although you could sort of say that this commercial from Iowa is funny, I guess. Let's hear that.
I'm Joni Ernst. I grew up castrating hogs on an Iowa farm. So when I get to Washington, I'll know how to cut pork.
Joni Ernst, mother, soldier, conservative.
My parents taught us to live within our means. It's time to force Washington to do the same. To cut wasteful spending, repeal Obamacare, and balance the budget. I'm Joni Ernst, and I approve this message because Washington's full of big spenders. Let's make them squeal.
All right, Chris Knopp, I said that I've been obsessed with the Elizabeth Esty Speak family ad. I think this is the one that's been taking up most of your thoughts.
It has been, and the main thing is it's such a great straight line, and I'm trying to stay out of trouble. I was warned by my people back at the agencies that do not say what you're saying around here about that spot.
All right, well, you also, Wolfberg's worried that you'll step on his joke, too. So,
My joke is, what's the commercial from the guy who's a Moyle going to sound like?
How many?
The three Jewish guys here all wanted to do the Moyle joke.
First time this year with a Moyle reference. I would assume
right?
on
first
the Colin McEnroe show.
That's first time in history.
Necessarily the case.
Okay.
but it might be. All right. So our number, by the way, 860-275-7266. Matt Kaufman, one thing that's changed over the last few election cycles is that ads are less and less likely to come from actual campaigns. I mean, they still come from actual campaigns, but there are so many other players, outside special interests, governors associations. I heard the National Sports Shooting Foundation's radio spot against Malloy over the weekend. There's like all kinds of people sort of jumping into the game here. I mean, first of all, is it a game changer? And are these ads any different or held to any other set of standards than the ones that just come straight out of campaigns?
Colin, are you telling me we're done talking about the Iowa ad?
Oh, did you want? Did you have a big castration joke? You wanted
the phones have lit up, and you know, I can tell you, I don't know the specific answer to that question of whether or not non-candidates are held to the same lack of standards as others. Is it a game changer? I'll say I don't know, but for a different reason. I think there was concern with Citizens United that this is going to kind of flood money, and there was a perception on whichever side of the political spectrum you were on that, you know, the other side was going to take enormous advantage of this. In fact, both sides have. You know, there are extremely wealthy liberals and extremely wealthy conservatives. There are extremely well-financed, sort of generally, you know, pro-business conservative kind of organizations and extremely well-financed, more sort of, you know, lefty union types. And they have indeed flooded Connecticut and elsewhere with an enormous number of ads. So it may be a game changer in the sense that, you know, it's great for the coffers of local television stations and a game changer in the sense of it may add to the politics, you know, the campaign fatigue that electors have. But I don't think it's a game changer. I don't think it's proven to be a game changer in terms of you know, people being able to buy people and put them in office.
If you remember, originally, the way you were able to tell it apart, whether a spot was from a special interest group and one from the politicians, was the politician would say at the end, "And I approve this message," which was supposed to make you think they weren't going to be so bad, because why would a politician associate himself with such a negative ad? Mm-hmm. You can't tell the difference. And 4 years ago, you might be able to tell the difference. 8 years ago, yeah, you could see the PAC ads were much tougher than the political candidates' ads. You can't tell them apart anymore, especially around here.
Although sometimes they're stylistically a little bit different. And Max, I think you've been noticing this. One of the sets of ads that I've been watching too, Grow Connecticut ads, and they a lot of times some of them are just sort of standard negative ads, but some of them are filtered through these kind of regular people. I mean, I assume they are regular people.
Exactly. I think me and you had the exact same thought on this. It looks different. It's still meant to be negative, but it doesn't have the elements we've been criticizing for the last hour. You're talking about it. It makes it look like these are real people, normal human beings, black, white, Asian, Hispanic, who are saying, "I dislike Dan Malloy," or maybe not that. You know, now that I'm thinking about it, I don't think it's that direct. But they say, "My taxes have gone up."
Oh no, and they see specific things like it costs more, like to get your dog shampooed, you know, because there's an extra tax.
I love that guy in that one ad. Yes.
Actually, I think it's a woman, but it's sort of like it's, you know, but the people are they're average looking, and they're not beautiful for the most part. Sorry, people, but you know, they like.
Well, I think it's clear what they're trying to hit on. As I do my best Dan Malloy impression, let me be clear. No, it's just that they're saying these are regular people. You're a regular person. This is happening to you. It's happening to us too. You need to go to the vote. You need to go to the ballot box, and you need to vote this way.
Are they really regular people, or do they – like, how do you –
Oh, they're probably not.
They could be. I mean, it could be either way. Sometimes regular people sound like actors, and sometimes actors are much better at being regular people.
And then there are actors who specialize in being regular people.
Who are really, really good at it. They have conversational quality. So it's all in the casting. I mean, they will have casted hundreds, if not thousands, of people before they find just the right ones to say just the right way.
I can promise you on some of those SAG-AFTRA lists, it says perfect for political ad.
And definitely. I mean, these people may not even be from Connecticut. I don't know. I just noticed that they all have these kind of pastel colored tracksuits on and stuff. I mean, they kind of pop out. They're very colorful looking. I feel like they didn't just drive down the street and knock on doors and get some people.
I think they do have town names on them, though.
Yeah, they do. It says Lois from South Windsor.
Right. So that's South where they
Windsor, Nevada.
So you better fact check that, Kaufman. I want to know by the end of today whether that woman's really from South Windsor.
Say there's a Malloy ad, or at least a Democratic ad about. It's like the guy who leaves a dollar on a $19, you know, tip. And I haven't fact-checked this, but if you look at the bill, whatever bill that came from, the sales tax was 7%. That was not an ad, you know, at least not a restaurant bill drawn up in Connecticut.
We have to go. We're all done. Although I will say I had went over for coffee with Tom Foley, and for a glass of club soda, he left a $10 tip. I can pass a polygraph on that one. Kaufman, come on, bring your worst at me. I can handle you. All right, we got to go. We got to thank Steve Wolfberg, Matt Kaufman, Max Reese, and Chris Knopf for joining us today. We'll be back tomorrow.
Kyone Wolf. Is that even her real full name?
Yes. Yes, it is. Paid for by Kyone, Marie, Julia, Gladys, Khalil, Danger, Onion, Eslin, Morris, and Walker Wolf IV.